Welcome to Top Stock Picks. This is the 8th day of June 2017. I am your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really pleased to have with me once again Gwen Preston. She is the editor of the Resource Maven newsletter. You know, Gwen had worked for a number of years with the Northern Miner as a journalist. She has a bachelor's degree in science, and she put that to work for the Northern Miner, but now she's using the experience that she's gained over the years there to share that experience and knowledge with her paid subscribers, and sometimes, like hopefully today, we'll get Gwen to share some of her insights free of charge, though I would like to say that if you really want to take advantage of Gwen's expertise, you should consider subscribing to her newsletter. It's resourcemaven.ca, resourcemaven.ca. Welcome, Gwen. Thanks for joining me again today.
Well, thanks very much for having me, Jay.
Always good to talk to you. I think before we get started, I'd like to just ask you a little bit about your newsletter. You normally publish every Wednesday, but in the July and August time frame, I guess you figure it's time to take a bit of a break, and you're publishing only biweekly, right?
That's what I put out there so that I have that option. I basically do publish every Wednesday, even through the summer, so definitely in the summer. There's a lot of trips to go visit projects. Sometimes those will get in the way of the publication schedule. But the main letter, I do my best to put out 52 editions a year. So that's an effort, as you well know.
Yes, it is an effort. And I know that you have a very high level of energy, Gwen. I've met you enough times to know that. I know that you're a runner. You keep yourself in great condition. And your subscribers obviously benefit from that. I want to ask you also, you have a premium service. Tell us about that. What does that entail?
Yeah, so the main letter, like there's two ways to invest in the mining market, right? You can buy in the open market or you can buy in financing, private placements. Mm-hmm. So the main Maven newsletter is my buys and sell, is tracks what I'm buying and selling in the open market. Mm-hmm. And the premium service is for those investors who are interested in participating in financing. What I do is when I learn about and get access to the kinds of financings that retail has difficulty getting into, I let my premium subscribers know, and not just let them know, but I secure an allocation for them so that if they'd like to participate, they have that opportunity. There's a lot of good opportunities on the financing side that retail doesn't get access to just because sort of the Vancouver scene fills them up and closes them before they're even announced, and so it's just not available. So that's the goal of the premium service, is to make some of those opportunities available to those subscribers.
All right, no, that's a good option. A good way to go, I think, and probably for accredited investors that are able to put more money into stocks, and also are willing to study and really understand what's going on with these companies. It's a very good option. Obviously, you get in there and you get those warrants sometimes that can really give you a real advantage over people that buy on the market. Well, anyway, you just mentioned that in the summer months you'll be doing more traveling, and I understand you just came back from a big trip to Mongolia, which leads me to the first stock that you said you would be willing to talk about, and that's Erdene Resource Development Corp. Trades in Toronto under the symbol ERD. I believe it trades down here in the States under ERDCF. I see it, I think, at $1.17 Canadian today, giving it a market cap of maybe around 170 million Canadian. And I had met a geologist this morning who is familiar with the project, and she said she just thinks it's a fabulous project. So let's hear what you have to say about it.
Yeah, it is a fabulous project, and it was a fabulous trip. Mongolia is certainly a place not many people get the chance to visit, and it is also an important factor in this story. So we take, first of all, there's the deposit. So it's a set of stacked gold veins that were exposed at surface, where the volcanics come to surface. It was back in just 2015 that Erdene put in proposals into that, found there was gold there. It seemed like perhaps the zone was going to be somewhat limited because those volcanics were only exposed for a small area on surface. So they drilled out that small area, but then the big game changer in the story came late last year when they stepped out to the north, where the volcanics were no longer exposed, they'd been covered over by younger Cretaceous rocks.
Mm-hmm.
They drilled through those younger rocks and found that the zone continued undercover to the north,
hmm.
and not only continued, but got stronger. So basically, this is called the Bayan-Hundi Project, BK for short, and there's not a resource there yet because the discovery only happened, well, it's getting on for 18 months ago, but this asset is, the zone, this gold zone is growing so quickly that there's no point yet in trying to tap a resource onto it because they're busy putting 25,000 meters into the ground right now to see just how far undercover it goes to the north and what it does to the west and what it does to the east. And there's lots of prospects to follow up here. So I would say, after having visited the project, that we're probably already looking at 1.5 million ounces. The core of that, maybe 400,000 ounces, grades really nicely, 3 to 4 grams, almost at surface. The rest of it is probably closer to a gram. These are just my back-of-the-envelope numbers. But that's before even the results that came out just this morning, which is another hit of high-grade gold in those step-outs to the north. So without getting into too much detail, this is a rapidly growing, near-surface, well-mineralized gold zone that I think is going to turn into a significant deposit by the time the very first resource estimate comes out, which will probably be in early 2018.
Yeah,
that's a deposit.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I'm just looking at the headlines from the announcement that came out today. 108.3 meters grading 2.82 grams per ton gold. Amazing. That's quite an intercept.
It really is, and this is they don't totally understand what's going on structurally with this deposit yet. It's definitely stacked veins, but it's also when you hear the word vein, you get worried about nugget effect and super high grade bits influencing the broader grade. But we've spent a lot of time with the 3D model, and I have fairly good confidence that the intercepts are well spread out through the deposit, and that this will work as an open pit operation, which is unusual in the world these days, right, to find good grades at surface with scale.
Mm. Yeah.
So the deposit is really, really interesting. The other factor, like I said, though, is Mongolia.
And yes.
Mongolia is a country that attracts or sparks different reactions amongst the resource investing crowd. Of course, the big story that happened in Mongolia is Oyu Tolgoi, which Ivanhoe discovered, made it into what it is. Rio Tinto essentially took over and is developing. It's currently an open pit mine. It's also adding a significant underground component. Altogether, they're going to be putting $10 billion into capital to build this operation, but the result of that will be the fifth largest copper mine in the world. And the Oyu Tolgoi really matters. It matters to Mongolia because, especially by the time the underground is ramped up to full operation, Oyu Tolgoi will represent a third of Mongolia's GDP.
Mm.
So clearly a really significant asset for the country. But also the process of Ivanhoe and then Rio advancing, permitting, and coming to profit sharing or investment agreement with the Mongolian government was fraught with difficulty, but eventually successful. And that process, I think, has taught the Mongolian government a good amount about what works and what doesn't work in trying to work with mine developers. I'm not trying to say that Mongolia is going to be an easy, secure place to build a mine, but we spent a huge amount of time talking about permitting and how it works and corruption and the government and meeting the government, meeting some of the guys who built Oyu Tolgoi while I was there.
Mm-hmm.
And I left more confident in Mongolia than I had been before going. I mean, I think odds are that one can permit a mine in Mongolia a lot faster and more easily than one could permit a mine in most of the rest of the world, including all of North America, will there be difficulties coming up with an investment deal? Perhaps. Those rules are also written. And there's a new government in Mongolia, came in last year that was elected on the basis of attracting more foreign investment, because there was lots during the Rio, a different government came in, and if I can be sort of crass about it, was greedy and drove international investment out of the country because of its greed, and the Mongolians kicked that government out and brought back in the government that courts international investment. So they're a young democracy figuring out how this all works, but I think it can work, and the geologic prospectivity of this country is phenomenal. I mean, that underground deposit that Rio's driving into is 400 million tons of 1.6% copper. And that's like one of the first discoveries in this country.
Right.
So this is a vast, underexplored country, and the Erdene team has been exploring there, if you can believe it, for 20 years. There is no group in the world that understands the prospectivity and the targets in Mongolia better than Erdene. So I think they've kind of got a tiger by the tail here with their current discovery, and they have a huge list of other targets through the country that they could look to next once what I think will happen is that someone will take out Bayan-Khundii, this gold asset, and then they'll move on to the next opportunity in Mongolia.
All right. Interested in knowing, do they have any sense yet of the orientation of this deposit? Is it getting deeper as they trend north, or is it too early to know, to have a good sense of the geometry of it yet?
That's a good question. So as you go north, it gets a little bit deeper because it does go underneath that Cretaceous cover,
yeah.
So it's not right exposed to the surface. But it doesn't plunge steeply. You basically the prospective unit are these volcanics, and they're sandwiched between the Cretaceous cover on top and a syenite intrusive that's below. The cover can be somewhere from 30 to 100 meters thick, but as soon as you get through that cover, you get into these veins. And the veins actually are perpendicular to the strike, the north-south strike of the zone.
Mm-hmm.
The veins actually are perpendicular to that and stacked along that north-south strike. So structurally, still some questions about how this came to be, but it's basically, the target here is to develop an open pit gold deposit. So again, that's somewhat unique in the world today to have a well-mineralized gold deposit that's an open pit target.
Yeah, I'd say so. Any work on metallurgy yet?
They've done some initial work on metallurgy that looked good, but that was very initial. So now they've put together a series of samples that are more representative of the range of grades that you can get in this deposit. And those are in the lab right now. But this is mostly disseminated. You get some visible gold, but it's mostly a disseminated system. And I didn't walk away with any reasons to feel concerned about metallurgy.
Oh, okay.
There's more information forthcoming, but it looks good to me.
All right. Well, certainly one that will be on my radar now. Thank you, Gwen, for that one. The next one you said you were interested in talking about is GT Gold Corp. That's a brand new one to me. Trades in Toronto under GTT, 71.4 million shares. Recent price around 40 cents Canadian, giving it a market cap of around $28 million in Canadian money. They're in British Columbia. Tell us about that Tatoga, or how do you pronounce the project?
Tatoga. Yeah. Tatoga, yeah. So the Golden Triangle is the area of British Columbia that's getting the most attention these days because Pretium is busy building the Brucejack mine up there, right? And they're going to tap into the Valley of the Kings deposit, which has 8 million ounces of gold in rock that averages 16 grams per ton.
Mm-hmm.
So Valley of the Kings is an unreal deposit.
Yes.
And it was that discovery that has really sparked the surge of interest in the Golden Triangle. And GT is part of that. But what GT really is from an investor's perspective, it's a binary exploration bet. They are testing the Saddle target. The Saddle target is an incredibly high-grade soil anomaly. So there's sort of a 500 meter by 500 meter zone up there where in soil, the gold grade averages 7 grams.
Oh.
So, I mean, that's mineable soil. A bit crazy. And this has never been drilled. And this is on a plateau that's on the top of a mountain. So it can't have been concentration effects. The soils and the gold didn't fall down the mountain and concentrate in an area.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know what it is. We don't know why it is. But they are setting up camp right now and drills should start turning to test this target pretty soon. So it's a binary exploration bet. I mean, perhaps it's some tiny little zone at surface that created this golden soil anomaly, or perhaps it's another Valley of the Kings. We have no idea. But it is an anomalous, like an abnormally high soil anomaly for sure. that's definitely worth testing. And it's also worth noting that this project is pretty well located. It's basically right beside Highway 37 that runs up beside the Golden Triangle. It's only 10 kilometers from the Red Chris, operating Red Chris mine.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty easy access. They are going to have to use helicopters to do the drilling because, like I say, it's up on top of a hill. But it's a well-located prospect should it develop into something. So, yeah, it's a really interesting one. I mean, if it works, it could be pretty hot.
So what are they expecting? I mean, are they drilling through the soils into some hard rock?
Absolutely. So this is, like I say, the targets basically cover a plateau on top of a mountain, and they're just going to drill. They don't know because of the cover.
Mm-hmm.
The place was glaciated until recently, and the glaciers, as they receded, left behind a lot of soils. So you don't really see a lot of outcrop up there, so they don't know anything really mm-hmm. about what's going on structurally in the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
So they're just going to drill into the soil anomaly. That's the best they can do for now. To be efficient about it, they're doing RC holes
mm-hmm.
rather than diamond drilling.
Sure.
So they're going to do like as many as 70 RC holes, just trying to figure out what's going on. Is
mm-hmm.
there structure? Is there gold? What's going on? If that works, then they will follow up with the diamond program to see, you know, to gather more information. And at this point, there are actually two soil anomalies, one sort of a little bit more to the west and a little bit south and more to the north. And if this is a vein structure that they're going into, perhaps these are zones that connect through the mountain.
Mm.
But it's far too early to actually say. This is just what you can surmise, guess, when you look at, you know, the soil anomalies draped over a topography. But at this point, it's a matter of going up there and seeing where on earth all this golden soil comes from. And we don't know anything at this point about what might be causing it, but it'll be really interesting to find out.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's just nuts, 7 grams per ton soil. So, yeah,
yeah.
Very interesting. I guess, you know, it's a sort of a hit or miss. Huh? It could be something really big, or it could be something, who knows. Yeah, very interesting.
That's exactly. That's
now,
why that's where I would have a binary.
Exactly.
Or it could fail.
Yeah, exactly. Well, one other issue, though, that's come up recently were the elections in British Columbia, and not considered to be all that friendly, perhaps, for mining and especially for early mining projects. I'm talking to a lot of people who have more advanced stage projects in BC, and the general sense that I get is that the more advanced, the safer they probably are. But the new government that came in there with, I guess, actually not a majority government, is it a minority government? The Liberals, which are, I think of as more free market orientation, were in power for 16 years and now they're out. And you have the NDP, is that what it's called? The party that's, and the green guys,
yes.
So they could form a coalition and maybe make life rough for the mining companies. What are your thoughts on that, Gwen?
It's a pretty interesting political scenario in British Columbia after, like you said, 16 years of Liberal majority government. And yes, the Liberals are more free market, more conservative or Republican would be perhaps better names for the Liberals, but this is how it is in our province. So yes, now instead we have the NDP, who are the more socialist-esque party, in teaming up with the Greens, who only have 3 seats, but 3 seats held the balance of power after
mm-hmm.
the election. So we do have that coalition government forming. What's it going to mean for miners? So impossible to know, but my perspective, first of all, the focus here in BC in terms of any kind of anti-resource sentiment has really been on oil pipelines
mm-hmm.
and on natural gas, on an LNG facilities. So
mm-hmm.
if this coalition government is going to target any group of resource, any part of the resource sector, scapegoat them, my sense is that it's going to be LNG and pipelines that are going to get the brunt
mm-hmm.
of that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get the sense, there wasn't talk in the campaign about mining as a target.
Mm-hmm.
So mining so far has just been under the radar, carrying on. Certainly the last time the NDP was in power, it was terrible for miners.
Mm-hmm.
You know, permits stalled and royalties increased, taxes increased, it was not good. This is, though, a minority government, a coalition situation. The Greens, whatever their name may suggest, are a pretty pragmatic group.
Mm-hmm.
So that structure of government, a minority coalition government, certainly limits the extent to which things, I think, could change, at least mm-hmm. dramatically. And I do think it's important that mining has not been in the discussion.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm optimistic that mining and exploration will be able to carry on as is, at least while this minority government goes along. I would be a lot more concerned if I was trying to build an LNG plant or trying to permit a pipeline.
Mm-hmm.
But at this point, it's sort of a fingers crossed and hope that it works
mm-hmm.
outlook.
All right. One more, Gwen. Fireweed Zinc. It looks to me like a brand new story, brand new company. Zinc project in the Yukon, trades in Toronto under the symbol FWZ. I don't see a symbol at all down here in the States. I was looking to see if I could pick up some shares. Only 17.8 million shares, if I've got that right, 87 cents Canadian. So it's a pretty small market cap, actually, about 15 million, I suppose.
Yeah.
Tell us about it, because I know nothing about these guys, very little about these guys, other than I think Eric invited them to the Metals Investor Forum, and I think that you maybe have written about them, so you know something. Tell us about them.
For sure, yeah. So Fireweed, brand new. They started trading only last week. So they've only had a few days of trading under their belt. Tiny float, so they do have 18 million shares outstanding. But less than half of those are actually free trading. A bunch of them are under escrow for various reasons. And so really tight in terms of available, like, liquid float. And small market cap to start with. But I think this is a story that, assuming the zinc market does what I think it's going to do, I think this is a story that's going to attract a fair bit of attention. So just to address that first, you know, the zinc market, the mm-hmm. zinc price ran up 80% in 2016. It has certainly eased off so far this year. Is that a consolidation of the gains last year? Is that because the zinc market is not actually in demand? I think it is a consolidation of the gains from last year, a slight pause, hoping that there will continue to be a zinc price run up. The fundamentals for zinc are very strong. The price run up did incentivize a little bit of additional output from existing operations, but zinc is a market where the price has been so for decades that there is a real lack of projects in the pipeline here
mm-hmm.
to replace some of these massive mines that have closed in the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm bullish on zinc fundamentals, and provided that is correct, and that the zinc market remains strong or strengthens from here, I think Fireweed is going to be an interesting project in that situation. And the reason is, we're talking about an asset that's reasonably well-developed, actually. So there's two deposits that are side-by-side, Tom and Jason. Tom was discovered in the early 50s. Jason was discovered in the 70s. They were advanced independently for decades until Hudbay managed to add them together in 2007, I think. And then did a little bit of more exploration and put out a joint resource estimate. And that estimate, it's historic right now, classified as historic, but does outline 30 million tons of resource, if you combine indicated and inferred.
Mm-hmm.
The grade better than 6% zinc and 3 to 5% lead with a reasonable silver kicker, like 30 to 50 grams per ton silver.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a pretty good resource. That's already big enough to support a mine
mm-hmm.
if you wanted to, especially given that the zinc grade is better than 6%. So good starting point for sure. And, of course, open for expansion. And I say it because the years, again, zinc prices being low means that people did not put money into exploring for zinc. So there's good opportunity to expand the Tom deposit. There's some opportunity to expand Jason, and there's a lot of potential, you know, property-wide exploration to find more of these lenses of mineralization.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, good starting point. The team is going to get up there. They're going to do the work to bring both Tom and Jason into compliance so they can be modern, current resources instead of historic ones. They're going to see if they can expand those resources a little bit at the same time, and they're going to do a bunch of property-wide exploration, geophysics and sampling and whatnot, to see what else might be right there, you know, proximal to these defined deposits, And within a year, they're going to wrap economics around these guys and put out a PEA. So in a zinc market that needs new mines, this is a high-grade asset that's already got a good resource. It's on a road. It may be in the Yukon, but it is on a road. So it's road accessible. That's going to have, you know, a basic mine plan wrapped around it within the next 12 months. So I think it's sitting in a pretty good position.
All right. Well, it's another one definitely have to keep our eyes on. Well, you've provided some nice ideas for us, Gwen. I want to thank you very much for your time. I know it's very valuable. You're extremely busy these days in this bull market.
It's always a pleasure to see you today.
Well, it's fun to be busy when you're making some money. Today wasn't particularly good, but I think we're in a bull market for commodities in general, so I'm very pleased that you could share some of your great ideas. And again, folks, the website is resourcemaven.ca for Gwen. Next week, my Metals Investor Forum newsletter writer guest is John Kaiser. Please join me next week at J. Taylor Media to hear some of John's interesting ideas. He always has some really interesting, unique ideas that not too many other people are following, so be sure to listen next week.